And you're listening to WMRWLP Warren 95.1 FM. And the following program represents the opinions of producing participants and does not represent the views of WMRWLP or its license holder Roots Work. We're here with a guest from Canada, Cantina Taber, and she is with the Mohawk Nation. And what we're going to try to accomplish today is get a more of an understanding of the Mohawk Nation from the Canadian perspective at this point, and get more of an understanding of the history and what has been happening. Cantina, could you tell me about your family history and where you live and just a general idea of what you're about?
And have lived all my life in a Mohawk community, which is near Montreal. And I'm going to be 72 very soon. I've been active among my people all my life, and that's about it. I don't know what else you want to know.
No, that's totally fine. Okay, and there's something that's been brought to my awareness. There's been a mass grave discovered at one of the oldest Indian residential schools in Brantford, Ontario. And could you explain what's going on with that and how that happened?
Well, from what the residential school in Six Nations, which we call the Mush Hole, was closed down in 1970, I think. Anyway, it was used for a cultural center after that. But before that, it was one of those horrific horror places where our children were taken and abused, and they were terrified. They were brought in there supposedly to learn how to be good slaves, but it turned out we're not very good slaves for many reasons. Anyway, so this went on for a long time. Finally, in about 1943, during the war, a lot of our communities removed our people. And they used them for training of the soldiers for all kinds of things. Anyway, they brought a whole lot of children to the residential school. And this was the army. And they didn't have enough room for them. They set up cots all over the hallways and everything, and they just didn't have enough. They brought all the children there. It was the children. So anyway, from this witness, I guess a lot of the witnesses are dead. They'd be older than I am anyway, and I was born in 1940. And from what this witness said, Mrs. McNaughton, she said that they took all those children outside. They had dug a great big ditch or a hole. And they stood them in front of the ditch, and they killed them all. And then they pushed all their bodies in the hole, and then they covered it with dirt. And some of them were still alive. Some of the children were still alive. So she remembers this. Anyway, there's new technology. Anyway, they covered up that area with a lot of dirt. I forget how many feet of dirt was put there. There's a huge mound. And so with this new technology, they've discovered bones and bones were coming up, as you know.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The earth will push out things, you know. And so some bones were coming out. Anyway, people talked about it. Finally, they went in there and found that it was a mass grave of children. So the women of Six Nations took it over and said that nobody can touch it. And they needed some experts to come there and help with digging and forensic and taking, you know, taking a look at it. I've seen videos of some of the bones. They are of children. So anyway, so that's, I guess there's going to be some action taken. I don't know what it is. I don't think I'm at liberty to say at the moment.
Hmm. Interesting. See, I guess that's part of the issues that I'm trying to understand, because it's sort of been a constant theme with the United States and Canada as far as the indigenous people of North America. It's a constant war. And to see something like this that happened as recent as 1943, when the United States and Canada was supposedly fighting against the Nazis, who were having concentration camps, et cetera, and eliminating the Jews, and for something like this to happen as recent as 1943, I mean, to me is quite amazing. It basically, the theme continues. It's a constant. It's like in the United States, when the different nations start to do stuff and become economically viable, then all of a sudden the United States government wants to tax them or wants to curb what they're doing. You know, it's like a constant treaty, breaking of treaties, I guess. I mean, it's
well, the thing is, you're calling it a war with regard to us. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a war. It was a Holocaust. They just came after us and killed off over 100 million of our people in the Western Hemisphere. So I wouldn't call that a war. They went after, like, even Washington sent troops into the Ohio Valley and wiped out over 100,000 of our people because he wanted that land. And, you know, we Champlain had campaigns to wipe out the Mohawks, because the Mohawks are the keepers of the Eastern Door, and we resist it. Our job is to resist the invasion, so we did our best, and we were probably very clever about it, and so they set out to wipe us out. And then, of course, we've always insisted on the Touro Wampum, which means that we can't give up the land. We won't. The natural world won't allow it, because this is our birthright, and this is where we've been placed by creation, so we have to protect it. So, the plan was to wipe us all out, and it almost happened at a certain time. There were so few of us that, we had to find children from other nations to replenish our people so that our nation could survive.
So how did that work? Bringing in people.
Well, at one point, don't forget, there were millions of us.
Oh, well, definitely.
There were about a few million Haudenosaunee. That's the Six Nations Confederacy, of which the Mohawk, one of the nations of the Confederacy. And, of course, we're allied. Our allies are all of the other nations, of maybe 300 nations. So whatever we did, whatever the Haudenosaunee did, we would always have to consider the best interests of our friends and our allies. So at a certain point, the Mohawks were up in the region, up in the eastern part of Onawarege, which is Great Turtle Island, and we were, we knew the warfare, we knew the terrain, we knew what we were supposed to do. We did do a lot of damage to the invaders, and so they relentlessly came after us, but they had superior weaponry, and they used a lot of different methods, tactics, like giving us smallpox, all kinds of things,
yep.
Starving us. Like in the Ohio Valley, where we had so many people of our people living, the Senecas were there too.
Mm-hmm.
They surrounded our villages and set our we kept a lot of our food, and set that on fire and set our villages on fire. And when our women and children and elders and so on came out of the longhouses, they would shoot them and kill them. And they would parade the the heads on their bayonets, and that's the kind of things they're doing that today. The same thing, parading bodies to show their fierceness, and I don't know how much bravery it takes to shoot and kill babies, you know, but that's what they've been doing, and they continue to do that today in other countries.
Exactly.
Here they're doing it in a different way by starvation and by bad water and bad housing and you know, we're in these remote communities where they keep it a big secret. Right now there's a big scandal over Attawapiskat, which is on James Bay, and where the Beers Diamonds wants those people out of there, and Indian Affairs is trying to make the living conditions so bad that the people, they've offered to move them, and the people say, well, this is where we belong, this is who we are, it's our identity, it's our birthright, we can't leave. So they're suffering through with very, very bad living conditions. So now it's come to the attention, it's gone out publicly. And this happens constantly because 70% of the water in our communities is undrinkable. So it's a constant, it doesn't stop until they kill off every last one of us.
So the drinking water, is the problem coming from mining operations? Is the Bear Diamonds, are they mining for diamonds, I guess? Because I've heard of this before. And that's on...
You've heard of it?
Yes, I've actually heard about it about a year or two ago. Hearing talk about it. So basically, is that affecting the water, or has the water been affected by mining in the past?
The thing is, Indian Affairs has a hand in it. Mm-hmm. The Department of Indian Affairs, of course. And, for example, in one community that I tried to go up and see, which is south of Attawapiskat, it's called Keshachewan. Mm-hmm. This was about 2006. Three of us, Mohawks, were sent up there to go and see those people because they had been also in the media that had come out. And what Indian Affairs had done is they had removed a lot of those people. There's about 2,000 in that community, maybe more. And they had removed families to motels in Winnipeg, Cornwall, Timmins, different communities. But others stayed behind to fight it. And their chief's name was, she wasn't the chief, she was a sub-chief, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Her name was Rebecca Friday. Anyway, we got in touch with her, and we said we'd like to come up there. So she invited us up there. And there was a woman that had been going up there. I remember her last name was Kirkland. She had gone up there, I'm here to help you. I'm here, you know, I'll bring water, and so on. But basically, she appeared out of the clear blue sky, and her and another guy named Zane, I don't think it's Gray, but his first name was, Bell, Zane Bell, had appeared, and they said, we're going to help you. But, of course, they were facilitating this, what Indian Affairs was doing. But they were doing it in a bit different way. They were infiltrating the community as helpers, as people that, you know, were going to look out for them. And they got their confidence. So this is, then it turned out this woman and this man, this Zane Bell and this Kirkland woman, had been taken up there by De Beers. De Beers, the diamond mine, and they wanted to, they had for themselves nearby, near this community, had set up a state-of-the-art community for their workers, running water and all. But the people, the native people, the Crees, were living on a floodplain, which they said, no, we want to live on, higher up, just further inland on the Albany River. Anyway, the Department of Indian Affairs, no, you stay here, and they built a wall around the community because there's, and then they said, we're going to build you a sewer system, a water and sewer system, and the, and that was up the river. So they put in this pond, which is where the sewage went.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, the way they put the piping in, the sewage went right into the drinking water.
Oh.
So the drinking water that came out had sewage in it, and it was brown. So Indian, so they said, well, what's going on here? They said, well, all you have to do is boil it, add chlorine in it, and you can use it. And everybody was getting sick. They were getting great big pus marks and blisters all over their body. People were sick. So when this woman came up there, she said, oh, well, we'll help you move, you know, until this gets fixed up. So that's when they ended up in all these motels. And there was one, there was a large group that ended up in Cornwall, which is near another one of our communities, Aguzashne. And my brother called me. He's a lawyer in Cornwall. And he told me, he says, there's something terrible going on here. And he said, I've been seeing these people, and they've, you know, they are complaining. And I think you, Mohawk Nation News, should investigate this. Anyway, so that's how we ended up. We went up to Timmins, three of us. And, you know, all at our, basically our own expense. We got to Timmins, and we tried to get a flight up to Moose Sunny, and then from there we would have had to go over the winter roads, you know, the ice roads, and then go up into the community. The only time you can drive up there, it's so far north, is in the winter. During the spring and summer, there are no roads. It's all underwater, so you have to fly in. So, but we were up there in the winter, so we would have been able to go up there. Anyway, we ended up at the airport in Timmins, and I don't know why, but we could not get a flight. They finally told us, we can't put you on a flight up there. And eventually, we stayed around the airport for a long time trying to get up there, and they wouldn't allow us. This was the airport, or the airline. So anyway, so then we called up Rebecca, and we said, Rebecca, we can't get up there. Anyway, so she said, well, wait in Timmins. She says, we'll come down. So they came down. They flew down, and they spent a few days with us, and they told us what was going on up there. Well, it was a horrific story. Horrific.
Mm.
So I wrote a report, and it's called Cold as Ice, a 25-page report, which I put on my website. And it's on www.mohawknationnews.com. Anyway, I posted it, and it went out there in cyberspace, and it's been floating around since 2006. And if anybody wants to read about it, I think you'll find it very interesting. You'll see that the province of Ontario, the Department of Indian Affairs, and De Beers were all working together to remove us, to remove our people. So anyway, so that's one story. And now, just north of that, the same thing is happening at Attawapiskat. So now we here are trying to get trucks of whatever they need, which is food and this and that. We're trying to get it up there, and we have to do it now because the roads are frozen. We can get, you know, trucks up there. So if anyone wants to help, they should get a hold of me, and I can forward your your emails on to the people who are our people who are trying to do that. Or if you want to make a donation, you can do that as well. So I can give you that information at the end. But I can give you my email address.
Okay.
And you can, if you can tell me about your interest, and I'll forward it on to the people who are organizing this. And these are the same people, our people here, from Kanawage and from Aguzasne. And these are people that we just don't, we get no glory out of it. We don't even tell people we're doing it. We just do it. And about 2 weeks ago, we put together all kinds of clothing and food and non-perishables, and we took a tractor trailer filled to the Lakota, and you know where that is, right? The Lakota.
Yep. Dakotas.
Yeah. Well, they drove it there. It took them. They left on a Friday. And they drove and drove and drove, and then they went there, they unloaded, and they drove back. And it was all volunteer. Everything was volunteer. So people have to start doing things, without expecting anything in return. And we've been doing that. And we're in a different situation at the moment. The Mohawks we're a targeted group of people because we always resist.
Well, you always speak up.
But at the same time, if we can help, we do help. And then there are many times where we need that help. Like, for example, the findings at Six Nations of that mass grave of children. I think that if people wanted to help and highlight and do something about that, they could. Once again, you could send me an email, and I could forward it on to the people up at Six Nations who are working on this.
Hmm.
So, anyway, those are two things that are current right now.
The sewage and the water mixing together, I know this is sort of a silly question, but do you think they're actually doing that on purpose?
Yeah, they are, definitely. Definitely.
I mean, it's basically like the smallpox. It's still using germ warfare and saying it's an accident. And I find it funny when you claim to be a technologically advanced country and you know how to do everything, and then situations like this still happen, and usually it happens to people that you're having an issue with. So then it's made to be this accidental thing. And it seems to be just a constant reoccurring theme with the different nations in North America. I mean, it happens all over the United States. It's a constant. And most people just don't pay attention to it. It's like it doesn't concern them, when actuality it does, because it's what you're doing to your neighbors. And the whole thing with the different nations is that the Canada and the United States are always trying, I guess still, trying to have them assimilate into the culture of basically white Europeans. And I guess it's something that will probably never stop. It's an ongoing, genocide, if we'd say. Because, basically, Hitler got a lot of his ideas for concentration camps from the reservations in North America.
Took the term, to solve. He had a term called solving the Jewish problem.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that came from here.
Oh, the final solution.
Look at a book called Wasichu.
Yeah.
And you'll see in there that he very much marveled and was very much in awe of how the Americans had gotten rid of, or how the Europeans had been able to get rid of us, 100 million of us. And it was called solving the Indian problem. And, you know, that was where he got a lot of the concentration camp idea is from here. Also, up until not that long ago, we couldn't leave our communities unless we had a pass, the pass system.
Really?
Well, that was taken by South Africa, I think in the 50s, they took that idea and did the same thing in South Africa to the black people. But that was what they did here. It was a criminal act to leave your community, and if you were caught, you were a criminal. You had to have a pass, and the pass had to be okayed by the agent, the Indian agent. And the native people were under the War Department. And
right.
That's the same thing in the United States. I think the way they run our affairs is pretty uniform in both the United States and Canada.
Yeah, a united front, so to speak. I mean, yeah.
But, you know, you're saying about absorption of our people.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, there's a change in all that. There's a big change coming. I don't know if you're aware of it.
As far as not absorbing but getting rid of? I said as far as not absorbing but trying to get rid of?
No, not at all.
No?
No, no, no. No, what's happening is that as we always were told from the time I was a little girl that these people, these light-skinned people, were only here temporarily. You know, these poor people that came here who couldn't even look out for themselves. They were sent here, but the rich ones came here to make more money, to become even more rich, and they all turned around and murdered and exploited us. But we were almost all wiped out, but now it's turned around, and in the United States, the figures are revealing that within 20 years, in the United States, one out of three will be indigenous people. They call us, you know, Latinos and whatever names are.
Right,
but we are indigenous people.
Yep.
And the white people, invaders or the visitors, as we call the people,
mm-hmm.
Will have to learn to work and share. And we find that their culture doesn't allow them to do that.
No.
So what's happening is that they're leaving the upper middle class. And they're conditioned to serve a secret ruling cabal in London, and they're being redirected to other places. So that's what's happening now. In the United States, white males say that they have no future there because all those laws that were created to protect all the underhanded things that they did, the loopholes are being closed up. So they're finding it harder and harder to brutalize and rob and slave us. So they're leaving, and they're even finding it hard to their own women aren't having children, which is probably one of the big problems, because the white race has the lowest birth rate in the world right now.
Mm-hmm.
Here in Quebec, it's one of the lowest birth rates in the world of the white people. So what's happening is that these visitors, or North American males, are having a hard time love and marriage, you know,
mm-hmm.
and companionship. And I think the main reason is that they don't believe they have to take care of anybody. So they go looking for compatibility on the Internet. Or they'll have a foreign spouse that they can leave behind, abandon. That's what they do. So right now in the United States, you have over 5 million students and workers that are living abroad. Mm-hmm. What that really means is that they have moved out of the United States. And then, and anyone can start looking in the internet and start searching this. You'll find the information is there. It's not readily there. You have to kind of look for it. Almost 10% of U.S. households are planning to leave the United States. And then there are a lot of others who live outside on a part-time basis, especially the elderly. Many of the elderly people say, well, there's nobody here to take care of me. I can't afford to live here. So they go to these countries and they find somebody that'll take care of them for $50 a month.
Right. It's sort of funny that you say this because as you're saying this, I'm thinking, and I know seven, eight people that have actually done that. And I never really put it in that perspective before. But a few of the people that I know, one of the reasons they left the United States is what we've done around the world and what we've done in our own country to people. And they're sort of disgraced, embarrassed, and they're sort of cutting their ties with the United States for that very reason. Because, I mean...
Well, it...
Go ahead.
Yeah, but you see, they're saying, oh, the tax man is chasing us away.
Well, some of them are, some of them are tired of the wars and the fighting. I mean, basically, when I travel abroad, I don't say where I come from. I usually say I'm from New England. They go, where is that? And I said, it's south of Montreal. You know, which is...
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, it's not necessarily a fear. I guess it could be in a sense of fear, but I mean, it's I'm sort of embarrassed by what our country does on a lot of things. A lot of things.
Well, there's more to it than that when you start looking at the figures. There are some who are leaving because of that, but there's
majority
millions leaving.
Yeah.
So it's the manufacturing. They've already moved the manufacturing to China, where there are no... unions.
No.
And they've moved the administration to India. So you pick up the phone to get information, anything like that, and that's where it's directed to, is to India.
Yeah. Well, a reoccurring theme, looking for cheap resources that we can take and cheap slave labor.
Well, they're moving it out of North America.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, and the worst thing, I'll tell you what, somebody just told me this. They said that, somebody was depressed, very depressed, and got onto a suicide line. And guess where it went? It went to India.
Okay, yeah.
Suicide line is being redirected to India.
Yeah, that should be more of a regional in-your-community type thing. But the sense of community is sort of lost. People are trying to get it back.
I mean, that's how far it's gone.
Oh, yeah.
So the guy who was on the verge of committing suicide had to talk to a guy in India. His name was Mohammed. And all Mohammed could do was listen to him. And I think in the end, this guy said, you sound like a very nice guy. over in India.
Right.
I mean, that's how ridiculous this is becoming.
Yeah.
But what's happening is they're putting their money in offshore accounts to not pay taxes. But the U.S. is classifying these people as, they're called expats.
Yeah, expats.
As terrorists, arms dealers, and money launderers so that they can freeze their bank accounts. So then they have to turn around and renounce their citizenship. And if you look on the blogs, they help each other,
give each
other information, and start reading the blogs, you'll see that. That's the reason why they're renouncing their citizenship. It has nothing to do with liking North America. It has to do with keeping their money.
Well, and then we have a program now, which at a lot of our ski areas and businesses in this state, if you spend $500,000 from a foreign country, it gets you a permanent resident status, and it fast-tracks you to become a U.S. citizen. So
Basically,
we're looking for money all over because we're a sinking ship, you know. So basically, you're allowing people to buy their citizenship to become part of the United States, which to me is it's sort of like the last straw. It's like the ship is going down. I mean, if you have to do things like this to spur your economy, which the U.S. economy is just so wasteful and disgusting, I guess is the word I'm looking for. And the American people don't really realize how bad we are as far as consumption and destroying the planet. You know, the planet will...
Well, yeah. They go, from what I've been reading, from what the information I've been picking up, they go to countries where there are some Caucasians to start businesses and have a congenial kind of life. And but mostly they go where they can set up a business and have cheap labor, where they can get a full-time housekeeper and a or a personal assistant for $50 a month. That's why they're going there. And they, yeah, it's true. They're finding that the American dream is a tired joke.
Right.
And the U.S. is very, very corrupt, just looking for deals. They've swindled everybody out of a future. And they're leaving an empty cupboard, the trail of lies. So what's happened is that the U.S. life has become worthless. And their overlords that you have, you know, running the media and running the entertainment industry and everything, I'm not saying all of them, but
no.
They're blaring all kinds of ghetto trash. You turn on the TV, it's pretty low class.
Yes, very much
Jerry
so.
Jerry Springer, whores,
yep.
You know, Law and Order. It's always about sexual abuse. There's always somebody with a gun in his hand. You know, it's always about the criminal culture, guns, perversion.
Right.
Child abuse, drugs, sports, and celebrities. And CSI, of course. That's all you see.
Right, naturally.
And taking apart a body. And then you look around at the cities. Montreal is a good example. It's falling apart.
Mm-hmm.
And it's... we had this snowstorm back in 1998. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah, the ice storms and stuff. Yeah, that was really bad.
The ice storm, yeah. Well, the first thing they do is they send in the military.
Yes.
Yeah. And then in the United States, do you know how many are on food stamps?
How many people are on food stamps? Jeez.
Yeah.
I would say probably a couple million, if not 10.
46 million.
46 million, I'm way off. Okay.
They're on food stamps.
Well, everything's collapsing at this point. I mean, it's been collapsing probably for at least 10 to 15 years, if not longer. And it's been held up by artificial means.
Well, these are the people, you know, are homeless. They're hungry, you know. They're lost. And when they think there's no more opportunity, what do?
They steal.
Well,
eventually rob and kill, basically.
Yeah, and the ones who can leave, right?
And
they
leave
somewhere else,
right? Because they complain about their taxes and all that stuff. But then, yeah, I mean, actually, I know people that have done that too, and it's hard talking to them because they totally benefited and got their wealth from what the country did, yet they don't want to pay the taxes.
That's
right. You know, they want.
Well, they were never meant to.
Well, it's basically greed.
They were never meant to stay here.
No.
So what's happening is they're self-destructing, the ones that are here. Like that woman went to the welfare office, food stamps for her two kids, and they wouldn't give it to her, and they were starving.
Mm-hmm.
So she shot her kids and shot herself. So they're self-destructing and abandoning their responsibilities.
So
it's pretty bad, isn't it?
So where do you think this all comes from? Not meaning to be on this continent in the first place, or bad morals, or just lost?
Well, I think that, there is a Hopi prophecy, and it goes something like this, the river, or the natural world, have a destination. You know, the natural world is going to continue. It's It yes. has its own way.
Yes.
And we, the people who have been placed here by nature, have to let go of the shore and push off to the middle of the river. And we have to keep our eyes open, and we have to keep our heads above water. And, you know, we have to be very honest and keep a lookout, because basically we're what they've been waiting for. So what has to happen is a community has to be created. We have to be good to each other. We have to look outside ourselves, inside. You know, you don't look outside for a leader. You look inside yourself. So the river yes. that I'm talking about is flowing at this time really fast. And some of our own people are scared, and they're trying to hold on to the shore. But they're going to suffer a lot. And we just hope that everybody is the person that they think that they are. That's the Hopi prophecy.
Yeah, so basically a cleansing or a purging of the planet.
Well,
in a sense.
I mean, that's the prophecy. Mm-hmm. You have to look at it to see what it is. But what's happening, too, is the sleeping lion, which is us,
mm-hmm.
Is starting to stir. Right now, you're having this big exodus. The people are being faced with a big question. Are we going to share or are we going to take? That's the question.
Yes, that is the question.
And then you've got all of the manufacturing moved out. You've got the administration moved out. And old people are moving to these countries to be taken care of. Our people have to wake up,
mm-hmm.
our own people, the indigenous people. So, I mean, in our case, we can stick together. And we need to stay out of the way of all these hungry masses who are going to be fighting each other for food.
Yeah, I think that's coming up faster than we realize, a lot of
us. Well, there's going to be a civil war.
Yeah, I can
definitely... I'm not saying there's going to be a civil war. I'm saying there's going to be some form of civil war. There will be fighting amongst each other.
Yes.
The upper echelon will be gone. We, the indigenous, will stay on the sidelines. And I think the war against nature is going to become extremely savage. I'm just telling you what I think.
No, I'm not saying this
is going to happen.
So you said war against nature. What do you mean by that?
Well, all these non-renewable resources are being gouged out of our land.
Exactly.
And the cities need this. Cities are they can't be sustained. They totally don't live in the natural world. They're totally divorced from the natural world. So there's a lot of injustices going on against us, against our land, the water, the wildlife, everything. And the civilization that came over here, which is building these cities, it depends on violence to maintain themselves. People, and now, you know, we're shocked that people have to pay to exist on the earth. If you don't pay, then the man with the gun is going to come and take you away.
Yeah, exactly. You don't have...
They become the lords, you know, of creation.
Yeah, the feudal system. Yeah, I mean, Europeans have been lost for so long, which basically is where I come from. It's been so disconnected from the land. And people, you know, you have this back-to-land movement again, which happens periodically in this country. And people still don't get the concept of what going back to the land is. You know, they think that you can buy your way back to feeding yourself and understanding how the climate works and how to, quote-unquote, live sustainably. But when people think of sustainably, they're still thinking in thousands of dollars. You know, they're not thinking about basics and stuff like that. It's still, how can I make money on this? And, you know, the green economy, we're going to, like, save the planet and all of this, but yet...
Well, even today, people all over the world, their situation is bad. Instead of staying there and fixing it, they say, I'm going to go to North America.
Yes.
And I'm going to make money. I'm going to get people to work for me. That's why they come here.
The American dream. The illusion.
To America.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they never say, I'm going to go there and help them maintain the land and, you know, stop the clear cutting and stop the tar sands and so on. They never say that. They say, I'm going to go there and make a few dollars for myself, and I'm going to get people to work for me. I'm not going to do it myself. I'm going to get people, you know, and I'm going to take that money and make money off of the backs of other people. You know, it's a parasitic worldview.
Very much so.
And that's what they come here for.
Yeah, it's really sad. I mean, basically, what we've done, we've basically exported around the world, and different cultures have done it constantly. I mean, it's a constant problem, but we don't learn. I mean, like here in the United States, I mean, we came here fighting, and we've never stopped fighting. I mean, there has really never been a moment of peace with this nation,
no.
And especially when it became the United States, definitely no peace, you know. And
well, that's the culture is driven by a death urge.
Just very
that's
violent
really what
death.
It is.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
You know, and you don't, like, we always thought that gradually they would learn and they would, you know, they would adapt to the way of life that we had. But we found that never happened. It's just getting worse and worse. It's getting out of control. And we find it a sociopathic system, you know, and we say, look, can't you be a nice people? Can't you, you know, that's like asking Bundy to be peaceful, you know?
Right.
That's what we're finding.
Right.
And so how can there be any resistance without any harm at all? People are saying, well, I'm going to resist. I'm going to go to Wall Street and I'll resist and nobody will get hurt. But pacifism is imposed by the middle class, who can pack up and leave.
Right.
They're the ones that are writing the, you know, organizing these things and bringing people together and putting out the basis for these movements. It's all pacifism. And So as far as I could see, I'm talking about ourselves. I'm not saying
right.
that this is... people can disagree. But
well,
those of us who have resisted, for example, in 1990, there was going to be a golf course created right over our burial grounds and our ceremonial sites up at Gunasagage, which is about 40 miles from here. And we said, no, you're not going to do that. You cannot do that. So they said, oh, yeah, we can, because we're going to do it. Anyway, it ended up that we resisted. So now they've targeted us as terrorists.
Mm-hmm.
And we're in the Department of National Defense books as terrorists, and also the Global Risk have targeted us. So because of that, they do that for a reason. They take away our civil rights by calling us terrorists. They say, well, if we catch any of you, you don't have any rights.
Right.
So,
yeah. And that's what.
And then what happens in all in these? I was watching all those Occupy protests,
mm-hmm.
and I could see very clearly that it looked to me. I'm not saying, but I'm saying looking at it, I could see that it was orchestrated.
What do you mean? The demonstration is orchestrated?
That's what it looks like. I think a lot of people went there sincerely, out of sincerity.
Yes.
But I think the thing was orchestrated, and when I saw provocateurs in the crowd, starting trouble and getting people, they would do something. They'd create a conflict first, and then the rest would just follow.
Yep.
Now, don't tell me that's not orchestrated.
Right. It was like
that is orchestrated.
Yeah, it was like
I've been in enough of these things to know when something is orchestrated. I know it.
No, you see it. I mean, it becomes very obvious.
I saw it. Yeah.
Like WTO in Seattle way back when. I mean, the violence started all of a sudden, you know, and it's just weird. And then it snowballs, you know, which is the sad part where you can't nip it in the butt. But, then that happens all the time.
Well, what they do is they watch, you know, the people, and then they say, okay, now there's a pacifist over there, you know. So we'll make them come and sit with us in the meetings, and they'll make agreements and decisions on behalf of the other people. That's what they do all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And those who take any direct action, they watch them. They're pummeled.
Yep.
So the pacifists do not support anything radical. So they're co-opted, and then power is handed over to them. The same thing happened in the environment movement. Because we know very well you can't save the type of civilization that's been brought over here and the natural world at the same time. You know, we the Mohawks, over our entire time that we've interacted with the invaders, the visitors, we've always forced social disruption. What's happened is industrialization is the culture that was brought over here. It's the culture of occupation. And so now they're leaving and they're being sent elsewhere to set up the same thing. What's happening in the United States, this is what it looks like to me. I'm not 100% sure.
Right.
But I think that fascists have taken over.
A while ago.
Corporatism is taking over.
Yes.
You know, and there's not too much resistance to it.
Because nobody sees it.
Because the people that have been brought over here, sent over here by by Europe, by the Europeans, are not fighters, really, unless they're told to fight.
Right, directed.
So the question is, at what point would they take a stand?
Yeah, what is the final straw?
Yeah, what is? It's here now, and they haven't done anything.
Yeah, it's been here for a while. I don't know. It's basically sort of been here since the very beginning. I mean, everybody always goes, the Founding Fathers would be upset at this. No, if you look at the Constitution and the way things are written, and you look at who was in charge and what their backgrounds were and stuff like that, there was really never a freedom concept here. I mean, they talked about it, but in reality and practice, it was really never like that. And the people are easily directed. I mean, once you get them to start hating something, I mean, they blind rage. I mean, and that's
well, the media does control a lot of that.
Oh, very much, very much so. I mean, the people themselves are, I believe majority of them are really good, but then very easily directed, and the media does it a lot. Like, I see people directly quoting from what they saw on TV. So the question is, does TV mimic us, or do we mimic TV? I mean, who?
Well, the media is owned by the corporations. So they're being told, the people are being told, it's the end of the world, because the media told them that.
Right.
But is it the end of the world?
Or is it a rebirth?
For us, it's not the end of the world, because the natural world doesn't listen to the media.
No.
you know, right now there's a lot of escapism being provided to the masses. They're being diverted from what's really happening, and people have become addicted to this diversion. And so you have to, you know, you have to start looking at it, and I don't think people are trained to be analytical. They're not looking at it.
No.
They're not analytical. Whereas with us, we are raised to be analytical because of the great law. The Gayanadit Goa tells us that we have to use our minds. We have to, you know, the form of thinking that they're trying to train us in is rote, memorization,
mm-hmm.
but not thinking, not analytical thinking.
Right.
So
take the test and pass.
Anything, you have to be able to just be like a dog, Pavlov's dog, just repeat, you know. And that's the education system. Well, that education system has been around since I was a little girl. We're almost 70 years now, that system.
Yeah.
Now it's pretty well entrenched, and people are not able to analyze and look at the reality of their situation. You know, and I was just talking to my aunt. I went to visit her, and last night she's over 90, and she's still bright as anything.
Mm-hmm.
And she was telling me about this other woman, whom I know as well. She said, you know, she belongs to this religion. I'm not going to say which one it is.
Right.
But it's a Christian religion, kind of an evangelical, fundamentalist kind of religion.
Familiar with those.
Eh?
I said, I'm familiar with those.
You know what I'm talking about.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Oh, I totally know what you're talking about.
Anyway, this woman, every time she saw her, she'd start trying to convert her. And so my aunt, who's younger than this other woman, she says, Gadenius, she said, I want you to, I'm using my mind when I talk to you. When you talk to me, you're just repeating what you were told at the meeting. Talk to me with your own mind. And you know that woman must have thought about it, because she never mentioned that ever again. So in other words, she wasn't using her own mind.
No, not at all.
She was using what she read in the paper and what the preacher or the pastor or whatever told her, and it's repeated over and over again to her, and then that's what she was repeating to my aunt. My aunt told her, put all that aside and use your own mind. You understand what I'm talking about?
Oh, I totally know what you're talking about. You're listening to WMRW LP Warren 95.1 FM, and we are talking with our guest, Cantinetta Bear from the Mohawk Nation up in Quebec. No, I totally know what you're